With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Well, the British Open is in the books, and it's weird because it feels like it is. I mean, the season's over for professional golfers. For the most part here. And what's even sadder is I start thinking about Firestone this week and how it doesn't exist, at least in the form that we used to know it, and having a PGA event here in Cleveland. But that's not the story from the weekend. The story from over the weekend is the British Open, and it was fun to watch yesterday, I'll tell you that, especially because of the elements. Let's go to Jason Sobel, who is still across the pond in Ireland and is nice enough to join us from the Action Network on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Hi, Jason. How are you?
I'm good. I'm actually not across the pond.
Oh, bummer.
One from home this week, so I don't have to make the travel back, which is nice. It's a shame not being there, but not having to make that Monday trip back is always a good thing.
But we'll find some kind of pond that you're across, and we'll be right in some way, shape, or form. Hey, give me your overall take on this past weekend and the Open and what the events that occurred.
Yeah, I mean, I thought, first of all, Royal Portrush was a fantastic host, first time in 68 years, and it's not going to be nearly that long until we see it back in the rotation. In fact, they're talking about 2024 already being a good spot for it to come back into that rotation. So I thought Portrush was as good an open venue as we've seen in a long time, and Shane Lowry was as good as a champion as we've seen in a long time. I mean, you throw weather at him, you throw a first major, you throw the local flavor and playing with the pressure of the home crowd rooting for you at him, and you throw a cast of really strong elite players on that leaderboard at him, and he didn't flinch the entire weekend. And kudos to Shane Lowry, who was a guy that maybe took a little bit longer than some would have thought to get to this sort of mountaintop, but I know it feels good for him now that he's there.
And, you know, the one thing, Jason, about Lowry and that, all the talk after his big lead after three rounds was, well, you know, he had a big lead in a major before and he blew it 3 years before, couldn't hang on. That had to be an interesting night's sleep going into the final round for him.
Yeah, he said he only got about 4 or 5 hours of sleep, which is half of what he normally gets. But I've always been a big proponent. I feel like the public doesn't quite understand this, but coming close, especially at major championships for world-class players, is viewed, I think, too often as a negative experience. Oh, that guy can't win the big one. That guy, he choked down the stretch. He can't do it. The way that the players, I know, look at these experiences as they're all positive. And even if it happens 2, 3, 4, 5 times, at some point, whether it's the law of averages, which means at some point you finally come through, or whether it's just you've sealed up that experience and built that up and built up the scar tissue and figured out how to go out and win, at some point those things are going to wind up being positive experiences. And I'm not sure that Shane Lowry deals with everything the way he dealt with it yesterday if he didn't have a similar four-shot lead going into the final round at Oakmont 3 years ago at the U.S. Open. I really do think that because he had been through that exact same experience before, he was able to deal with it better from learning from it.
Jason, Brooks Koepka did not win, but boy, his name was up on that leaderboard. And he becomes the fifth player to finish in the top five in all four majors this year. And Nicklaus did it, Tiger Woods did it, Ricky Fowler did it, Jordan Spieth did it. That's an amazing thing. And when you look at this year's majors, Dan, who you talked to earlier, Dan said, well, it's got to be Tiger Woods. And I said, well, maybe. But to me, it's Brooks Koepka being up there at all of these majors.
I mean, if we're looking at the story of the year, the story of the year is Tiger Woods winning the Masters. And it's hands down, and I'm not sure there's a 1B or 1C. I mean, it is Tiger Woods winning the Masters. It's one of the greatest sports stories that we've seen in a long time. But if you're talking about kind of what's taking over the golf world, what's kind of the main theme of what we're seeing in these big tournaments, it's Brooks Koepka, and Brooks Koepka has figured this out. And I don't think there's ever been a player in the history of the game like Brooks Koepka. I mean, Tiger Woods was better at major championships, don't get me wrong, but Tiger Woods didn't finish 50th and 55th and 60th in the events leading up to majors, then go out and win the majors. Tiger Woods was great all the time and used that momentum and that form to parlay into a major championship victory, and he just basically played his best all the time, and maybe a little bit better, kind of ratcheted up a little bit better for the majors. But Tiger always said he wanted his game to peak four times a year, and yet he'd go win at Torrey, he'd go win at Firestone, he'd go win at Bay Hill, and he'd win these other events over and over and over again. Brooks Koepka doesn't seem interested in those other events whatsoever. He only seems interested in the majors. He only shows interest in the majors. He's talked about using those other events basically as practice to go into these major championships. It all sounds like a terrible plan, except for the fact that it's working perfectly for him with, like you said, four top five finishes this year, and really over the last 3 years, he's been impeccable at the major championships.
Yeah, it's five straight. And you just said it, Jason. I've been sitting here trying to think, okay, is that a good attitude that you only get ready for those? Because, as he said, I practice for those, and I thought, well, you know, if you practice for some of the other ones as well, but then does that did you run the risk of burnout? You know, I mean, is it better to peak four times a year or something? It's a really interesting debate, but as you said, it works for him.
I think it's great that we have different kinds of players. If Jordan Spieth or Bryson DeChambeau, who I choose as a couple of guys that I think are more studious about their games than most other players, if Jordan or Bryson tried to play golf the way Brooks Koepka does and tried to strategize and schedule the way Brooks Koepka does, they would be in straitjackets. They wouldn't be able to do it. It's not something they can comprehend. By the same token, if Brooks Koepka said, you know what, I'm going to practice really hard and I'm going to play 28 events a year and I'm going to try to win every single one of them because I want a lot of trophies and played like some of those other players, I don't think it works for Brooks Koepka. I just don't think he can go about his business that way. So I love the fact that there's differentiation, that there's no one way to go out and be a professional golfer, that you can choose different paths to trying to get to the same destination. And he has chosen a much different one than we've seen from anybody else that's playing now or really has ever played.
Jason Sobel from the Action Network talking to us a little bit about the Open Championship from this weekend. Are you buying into the J.B. Holmes pace of play thing hindering Brooks Koepka? I mean, is it that you're 100%?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
I wrote it Saturday night. I said, this is going to be an issue. Brooks Koepka is a fast player. J.B. Holmes is a notoriously slow player. And when you have a slow player, you add in wind, and you add in, not that I knew he was going to shoot 87, but he played really, really poorly. You put all those factors together, and Brooks Koepka is going to be steaming mad coming out of that. And I don't think that Brooks Koepka was catching Shane Lowry anyway, so I don't think it's such a big deal. That said, if Shane had dropped a few more shots, Brooks could have at least a little bit of an accusatory tone towards J.B. Holmes as to why he didn't win a major championship. Because, I mean, you can't do that. And Brooks is completely right. I mean, look, if you want to take a couple extra seconds to talk to your caddy and figure stuff out, that's fine. J.B. Holmes, and Azinger pointed it out on the NBC telecast yesterday, he had 23 hours to figure out how he wanted to hit that first tee shot and then put his ball on a tee and stood there for 3 minutes trying to decide what to do. I mean, this is not something that should take that long. And I get it. These guys are playing for millions of dollars and they're professionals and they're in a major championship, but J.B. Holmes is notoriously slow. And quite honestly, it hurts his play. I mean, we've now seen him in the situation a couple of times, and he's played really badly every single time.
All right, Jason, just kind of a homegrown story here for us, because obviously Firestone turned into a senior event, and the World Golf Championships are in Memphis. Not that I'm wishing, you know, rain all 4 days or that the greens are completely burned out in Memphis, but does it feel weird not coming to Cleveland?
Yeah, it does.
Or Akron?
It's a little weird. I watched the event at Firestone a couple of weeks ago, Retief Goosen, a very good winner, and you had Steve Stricker in the mix, and some good names. I assume the fans enjoyed seeing those guys again, but yeah, it's a little weird not going to Firestone. It's a little weird having a WGC in Memphis. It's really weird having a WGC in Memphis the week after the final major in July at the Open. I mean, I do like the new schedule. I think this one's going to be fixed where they have a week in between the major and the WGC. But I've been calling this one the pneumonia swing on the PGA Tour because going from Portrush where it's 50 degrees and the wind is blowing and you got three sweaters on to going to Memphis where they're actually getting a little reprieve. It's not really going to hit 90 this week, but it's still going to be in the mid to high 80s every day. You're going to see a whole bunch of guys withdrawing with the flu, I think, on Friday afternoon if they're not playing that well.
Can Firestone host a major? Do you think we might get one?
Did had the PGA in the 70s, but that was a while ago.
Yeah.
It can.
It can.
You guys see, because I would think the PGA would be the most logical major.
Right.
Is May okay? Is late May okay in your area for a PGA championship?
You've been to Muirfield, right?
They get more rain down there. That's because they're cursed. Jack's cursed because of the Indian. Don't tell Jack that, but it's cursed. Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I grew up not far from Bethpage, and I spent some time with the tournament director there last year before they had the PGA Championship. And he said, look, it's not the week of the PGA we're worried about. It's the 3 months leading up to it where we're trying to put up the stands and we're trying to put up the merchandise tents and we're trying to have the entire infrastructure set up. And if we get a late snowstorm, all of a sudden, like, we're in deep trouble. And so that's probably the one worry. But you make a good point. If you can play the Memorial – late May, you can play the PGA Championship late May. So, yeah, it definitely makes sense that you guys can do it.
I look at golf, and I think there's so many great young players on the move that I think the game, Jason, might be in as good of a spot as it was when Tiger and Phil were in their heyday. Maybe this is probably the best since then. You agree? You differ? And are there any young guys you really like that you think – these guys are really going to carry the game in the years ahead, other than the obvious ones we've already talked about?
So I've always thought golf is dependent on superstars, and which is why Tiger Woods brought so many people to the game. He was dominant. He was polarizing. He brought the masses. I mean, your mom and your grandmother used to watch on Sunday afternoons to see if Tiger Woods was in the hunt and see if he would win because everyone wanted to see it. He brought in more than just diehard golf fans. And so what we have now isn't necessarily the same dynamic because we don't have the dominant player. What we do have are 20, 30, 40, like really, really, really good players. I mean, if you were to say to me, and I was saying this last week before the Open, I was ranked the entire field, all 156 players at an Open or at any major. And I said, you know, I get down to number 42 and I go, man, I really, really like this guy. And then I look at the 41 names above his, and I go, well, I really like all those names, too. And it's really difficult for me to differentiate and try to figure out, like, well, there's just so many good players. So, yes, it's really good for the game. I think the overall health of the game globally through the masses is better when there's one dominant player, and especially a likable, polarizing dominant player. That said, if we're not going to have it, then let's just go ahead and have a whole bunch of really good players who can win on any given week.
Jason, thank you so much. We appreciate your stuff. We'll check it out on Action Network, and we'd love to have you back on, too, especially to talk about other golf stuff. It was great stuff. We appreciate the conversation.
Anytime. Thanks, guys. Appreciate
Thanks, Jason. All right, Jason Sobel on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.